I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
And now, here's Michelle Badusky, keeping it real.
And today we are talking about addictions. Now, this is a really interesting conversation. I've been watching some things happening on Facebook on different pages in the last couple days since the city of Brandon announced that they are going to be installing Sharps containers for needle disposals throughout the city. And that's not what interests me. I think that's makes perfect sense. I don't know why it's taken them this long. I'm glad they're doing it. Good for them. Seriously, good for them. I think it's a great idea. But what's been interesting to me is the actual conversation that's happening under the stories and the different discussions back and forth between people talking about addictions and needle disposal and all this stuff. And I thought it was really that we should have a conversation about that. A very open, blunt conversation about addictions, about addicts, the who, where, why, and what of addiction. This discussion, I think, needs to happen because I had an interesting thing happen to me just the other day. I was teaching a motivational workshop that I call Dream Weaving. And I start this workshop by telling a little bit of my story, my background. You know, those of you who follow me know I am a recovering addict. I have been clean from narcotics and opioids. I can't even say that word, opioids, for 19 years now. And, you know, it's one of those things that I'm very open about talking about. And I start this workshop off saying that. And towards the end of the day, we were kind of joking around and we were talking about, you know, making different choices and breaking down walls and stigmas. And I made a comment that at the end of my addiction, I had a $300 a day habit. Now, this was back in 2000. So, you know, actually, you know what? If I was actively addicted today, it would probably cost about the same or even less because we didn't have meth back then. And that was a lot cheaper and a lot deadlier. So we had that conversation and I mentioned that. And one of the people, after hearing my story, actually said to me, he says, you know, and pardon my language, but he said, what the fuck, were you brain dead? Like, what's wrong with you? Addicts are just so stupid. They're like, why would you do that? You're just stupid. And I kind of smiled because I get this reaction a lot. And reading these comments about the city of Brandon's needle disposal or Sharps containers, I saw a lot of that attitude. And I thought, you know what? It's really good to have that discussion about addictions. Now, am I brain dead and am I stupid? I'm far from it. I actually made the joke. I said to him, I said, at the time, at the end of my addiction, I was at the top of my career. I was earning, you know, good money for what it was back then. And, you know, I was running a major hotel. I had 8 different departments. I had a staff of over 65 people and a multi-million dollar budget. And I still had a $300 a day cocaine addiction and still lost it all and ended up in rehab. And you can read about it all in my book, but that's what happened to me. And so when he said, were you brain dead and were you stupid? I kind of laughed it off because no, I'm far from it. I was far from it then. I actually made a joke. I said, you know what, considering how awesome I am now, could you imagine how brilliant I would be if I didn't kill all those brain cells with cocaine? And I do tend to laugh it off, but what he said was not uncommon. It is this common stigma of addictions that we don't necessarily understand how people get addicted, why they stay addicted, why they don't choose, you know, recovery, why they aren't in rehab. Even today, when I announced that I was going to be doing this video, someone said we need more treatment beds. Which was also interesting because just the other day I was speaking to someone who actually works here in Westman in the addictions field, and it was happened to be brought up in conversation how the beds that we have right now weren't full. I don't know if they are today, but they weren't when we had that conversation a few days ago. So it's not necessarily, you know, a one solution issue. It's not that, oh, if we just had enough beds, addiction would solve itself. No, that's not the way it works. Addicts need to be ready and willing to get help. I strongly believe, as an advocate for addictions, that when addicts are ready, there needs to be resources there for them. We need treatment options. We need long-term housing, clean, sober living, counseling. We need these things. We need medically assisted detox. Those resources need to be in place when addicts are ready. But unless and until addicts are ready to get help, none of that's going to matter. And this is where things like the debate on harm reduction comes into play. And this is where the conversation is going. When we were talking about addiction, I summed up my perception of addiction like this. This is it in a nutshell. After all my years of active drug use, after working with hundreds and hundreds of addicts, whether it's through 12-step programs or peer counseling or whatever it was, this is my summary of addiction. Addicts use whatever their drug is, and I say drug of choice because addicts can use anything. You can be addicted to anything: sex, alcohol, drugs, gambling, shopping, all of these things, pornography, you know, all of these things are addictions, and addicts use their drug of choice, whatever it is, to kill pain. Addictions come from pain. And for me personally, I was using drugs to kill the pain of, you know, what was happening to me as a child, the pain of memories of, you know, I'm an adult survivor of child sexual abuse. I was sexually abused by multiple family members when I was young. There was a lot of poverty, neglect, all of that stuff. I was in pain. And I turned to drugs to kill the pain. And as long as the pain of addiction, I knew I was an addict. I totally knew I was an addict. I was in rehab at the age of 15 years old. I knew since then I had a problem with drugs. I knew what I was doing. Why did I keep using? Because the pain of my addiction was less than the pain of dealing with my trauma. And I knew I was hurting others. I knew I was making mistakes. I knew I was spiraling. But the pain of my addiction was not, it didn't hurt as much to be addicted as it did to face my inner trauma. And many people will listen to that and go, you know what? You're a coward. Yes. Yes, absolutely. I was hiding from that pain. I couldn't face it. I had absolutely no coping mechanisms. I had no support systems. I didn't feel worthy of getting help, even if it was offered to me at that time. I wasn't ready. I didn't know how. And it was easier to numb and kill the pain with drugs than it was to face it. And only when the pain of my addiction became worse than the pain of facing my trauma was I ready to get and receive help. And I actually went and I took it even further. If you know my story, I actually hit my bottom and realized that the pain of my addiction was unbearable. And then I looked and said, well, here's the option of dealing with my trauma. I have no idea how to deal with that. That's unbearable too. What do I do? And that is where suicide came to play for me. And, you know, I'm still alive, thank God. But that was the third option for me. The pain of addiction, the pain of being clean, or death. And I chose death. I'm very lucky that death did not choose me, and I still am here living to fight another day, another year, another decade. But those were the options for me. And when I woke up in that hospital realizing I was still alive, I knew I couldn't go back to my addiction because there was nowhere left to go. There was no further down I could go. That was my bottom. So the only other option for me was to do the work that I needed to get clean and stay clean. And that is my perspective on addictions in a nutshell. It's not about stupidity. It's not about choosing to be addicted. It's about knowing, it's about killing pain. It's about hurting. And there is a physical aspect to the addiction, and that is part of the pain. You know, it's not just so much that it's like, oh, I don't want to deal with these problems, I'm going to stay high. Eventually, there's this physical reaction when you are not using. And it's physically painful. It's terrifying. It's absolutely, you want to talk, you know, someone said to me once, and it's amazing what people will say to your face sometimes. But someone said to me once, they said, drug addicts just don't have any willpower. And I just smile to myself when I think about that, because you obviously have never met an addict who's looking for a fix, because they will stop at nothing to find it. You want to talk willpower? There's some serious willpower there. But how I summarize it to people that don't understand addicts is that only until the pain of being addicted becomes worse than the pain of getting and staying clean, they will stay sick. And there is a saying that I live by, that an addicted person ends up one of three places if they don't get clean: jails, institutions, and death. It's actually written into the Narcotics Anonymous, you know, it's written into the program. Jails, institutions, and death. Those are your three options if you don't get clean when you're a drug addict. And I knew that those were options for me, and I was well on my way. You know, I was on my way. And here I am today, 19 years later, talking to you about addictions. Now, the reality of what is going on in Brandon is there is a drug crisis. And it's not just Brandon, it's everywhere. I mentioned even in my small town that, you know, it's here, it's everywhere. This is not new. You know, this drug crisis is not new. This has been going on a long time. Back when I was actively using, it was cocaine and heroin. You know, it was a different type of drug. What makes this crisis so different from my perspective is that, especially meth, let's just, you know, talk about meth. Meth is easily accessible because it's easily made. You can find a recipe for it on the internet. So it's cheap, it's easily accessible, and that's what makes it so deadly. And I've seen a lot of people say, if you know it's going to kill you, why would you risk it? Well, again, I go back to my scenario, because the pain of not using hurts more than the risk of dying. And for a lot of addicts, myself included, dying isn't necessarily a bad thing. You look at it going, oh, it's a risk. When you're feeling like your life is meaningless, when you're feeling like you're completely worthless, when you're feeling like no one cares if you live or die, when you feel like you're the bottom of the barrel and everyone you meet treats you that way, you know what? The pain of dealing with that is way harder to face than the risk of an overdose. And every time I used, every time I bought a drug from a new dealer or took a drug that someone handed to me at a party, I knew I was taking a risk. I knew it. I get it. And I know that you can't understand it if you've never been there. And that's why I want to have these conversations. I didn't wake up and say, hey, I'm going to be an addict. Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'm going to be a drug addict. No, I was in pain. And I found something to kill that pain. And eventually, because of the physical aspect of addiction, you need to use more to get the same results. And the more you use, the more addicted you become. The more you use, the harder you crash. I got to the point where I was using, you know, narcotics to bring me up so I can function, because I was at the top of my game. I was, you know, 25 years old. I was a single mom. I had put myself through school. I, you know, was working on three separate management diplomas by correspondence while running a major hotel, while, you know, troubleshooting restaurant and bar industry and, you know, everything from inventory control to staff and HR. I was doing all of this while raising my son alone with no family support. I was at the top of my game, but I was still an addict. Because I was in pain and I needed it to function. I got to the point where I needed it to function. I could not function without it. So I would take, you know, cocaine was my drug of choice, because when I was on cocaine, I was, you know, I could do anything, 10 feet tall and bulletproof. And eventually I was using so much that I couldn't sleep and I couldn't come down. So I would start using, you know, opioids were very easy. I'd get prescriptions for, you know, Oxy and things like that. Very easy to get, which is a whole nother podcast that we need to talk about, is, you know, the availability of these types of drugs in our medical system, but that's a whole different conversation. And so it was just this cycle. And then I would come down and I would be able to, you know, sleep or function or be normal for a while. And then I would need cocaine to bring me up so I could function again. And it just kept cycling. And in the meantime, my mental health, my physical health, everything else was deteriorating. And I needed more and more of the same drugs to get the same effects. And this is what we see happening. And when people talk about drug addicts, they have this idea of who is an addict. You know, we talk about the people on the streets. We talk about the people using needles. They talk about the people dropping needles. These are people. These are people that are in pain, that have experienced trauma. I don't know what kind of trauma, but you know what? Trauma is the gateway here. Trauma is the common freaking denominator. And it could be emotional, physical, but I have never met an addict who has gotten clean that hasn't had to learn how to deal with their own inner trauma of some kind. There's always something there. And it's not for us to judge other people's trauma. You know, just because I could handle something that they couldn't, you know, without turning to drugs, doesn't make me a better person than them. We're just different. We each handle our bullshit, you know, either way. And when we judge other people without knowing what's going on, that's where this comes from. And I'm watching some of these comments on these articles about a sharps container. Like, what exactly is the problem with having a sharps container in a park? Someone said, well, I'm worried that kids will get them. Well, first of all, your kids shouldn't be in a downtown park alone. And if they are, they should know better than to stick their hands down the funnel of a sharps container to pick up a dirty needle. If they're doing that, then they either need your supervision or your education. Now, someone else said, will addicts use them? It's like, I don't know. I would have. If I was shooting up in a park and there's a sharps container, I would have, because addicts are still human. Addicts are human. Somehow we have made it seem like, oh, if someone's getting high, then they must not care about humanity, or they must have complete disregard for everybody else's welfare. That's not necessarily true. Are there addicts out there like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. There are assholes everywhere, in every walk of life, in every profession, in every addiction. That doesn't mean they all are. So will someone shooting up in a public place or in a park or on a street corner use a sharps container? Yes. Will all of them? No. No differently than a trash can in a playground. Some kids will walk all the way across the playground to dispose of their garbage, while others will throw it on the ground right in front of the trash bin. It is exactly the same thing. Are these sharps containers somehow hurting our society? Not at all. If it means one less dirty needle found on the ground, that's a good thing. You know, we talk about harm reduction a lot, and I've been very, very outspoken. I'm on the record. I can share the podcast with you if you'd like, that I did on my views as a recovering addict of safe injection sites or harm reduction sites or whatever you want to call them. I am not for them. Not because the science is not there, not because I want to see addicts suffer, get sick, and die. My feelings are the exact opposite. I believe that some of this harm reduction when it comes to safe injection sites is actually lowering the bottom for addicts, making it safer for them to use. And that's the goal, harm reduction, right? I get that. But part of my bottom was knowing that if I continue to use, the chance of me getting AIDS, which, you know, it was 20 years ago, that was a huge thing. It still is, but we don't talk about it much. The chance of me getting AIDS, the chance of me overdosing, the chance of me getting a bad batch, every time I got high, I knew that. And it played a big part in me hitting my bottom because I had lost my regular dealer, right? And that means trusting your life with strangers and at a level of desperation that puts us all at risk, and especially as a woman, creates a vulnerability I knew I could no longer live with. So having needle, you know, we're talking about harm reduction, and I'm sorry I got a little emotional there. It's not that I want to see addicts get sick or die. It's not that I don't want to reduce the risk that they pose to themselves. I just know from my own experience that that risk can actually encourage people to get help. And yes, some people will get lost. And that is the reality of addiction, because we will not save every addict out there. We can't. They have to save themselves. When they are ready, we need to make sure that the resources are in place for them to get help. But we cannot force them to get help. It will never work. And when we're talking about harm reduction, needle disposal is not harm reduction. It is not giving them carte blanche to go and say, hey, you're welcome to shoot up here. What it's doing, it actually has nothing to do with the addicts that are shooting up. What it has to do with is protecting society and our children. It keeps needles off the streets. It's not giving, you know, them permission to shoot up. It's not saying that we accept this as a part of normal society, that, you know what, here's a needle disposal unit, so please shoot up here. That's not what it's saying. And for those that think that that's what it means, you're wrong. We heard the same argument, and I'm going to make a correlation here. We had the same discussion, the same argument when schools started handing out condoms, saying that, you know what, if we give them condoms, we're giving them permission to have sex. Well, you know what? They're having sex anyways. Let's make it as safe as possible. So these needle disposal units are not giving addicts permission to shoot up. They're going to do it anyways. So let's make it as safe for the rest of us as possible. That's what these needle disposal units are for. They're not one step closer to, you know, legalizing hard drugs, things like that. Now, the other, you know, issue that we saw in there was this anger towards drug addicts and drug use that I found really interesting. I was reading one comment that basically said drug addicts are, I'm not even going to use the words, but basically wastes of skin. And the faster they all die, the better. And I read that and I almost commented and I held back, because what was interesting about the person that made this comment is it's someone I actually know in real life. And I've actually had the opportunity to interview them when they were interviewing for a job with one of my businesses. And I started realizing that, you know, I'm not judging them for what they said, because that is a common sentiment when you don't understand addictions. But it made me realize we need to have this conversation, because there are addicts around us everywhere. I'm very open about it. I've been open about it for, you know, years. I wrote a book about it. I talk about it. I'm an open book. You got a question, ask me. There's not much that I hide. Actually, I don't think I hide anything, but we'll see. One day you'll ask me a question I don't want to answer, and then we'll know. But I realized that we need more discussions like this, that we need people to see that addicts aren't just, you know, useless people or lost causes, that they can come out of it, that they can do amazing things with their lives, that there is hope for everyone. And there's also a story. Now, don't get me wrong, because you guys know me. I can be a real hard ass. There is no excuse for absolving yourself of personal responsibilities for your actions. If you are an addict and you break the law, you know what? You broke the law. You need to be punished for that. If you, whatever, I don't care. Addictions and drug use is not an excuse to absolve yourself of personal responsibility. And somehow people assume that by understanding the trauma of addictions or listening to someone's story about why they are the way they are or what happened to them, that somehow we're trying to absolve them and feel sorry for them. This is not what this is about. I don't need you to absolve me for the shit I've done in my life. I've done a lot of crappy things to a lot of people that I may never, ever get to make amends for. And I have tried, and there's some that it just can never happen. And I have to live with that. Being an addict is not an excuse. I own that. I chose to do the things that I did. And a lot of times I did things that I knew were wrong. And addicts do that too. They're still human. They're still human. They're not wastes. And the more we keep thinking of addicts like that, instead of thinking of what they were before the trauma and what they were or could be after, or when we just assume that we know. Not every single addict is out on the street. You might know an active addict and not even know it. Family members, loved ones. And again, addictions aren't just drugs. I have a family member who is addicted to gambling. And I always say that I think gambling is one of the most dangerous addictions. And I want you to think about this. Gambling to me is the most dangerous addiction. I've seen it tear my family apart. I've seen it tear other families apart because it's invisible. If I went out one night and I did $1,000 worth of cocaine, you would know. You would see it. I probably couldn't even function. You would know. I'd be out partying. All of the signs and symptoms of drug use. If someone's shooting up and they've gone through $1,000 worth of meth or alcohol, you will know. If shopping's their addiction, you'll know. They'll have packages unless they hide them. Gambling, I could blow $1,000 in a minute and you would never know. It's silent. It's invisible until someone loses their house. And I think we all know someone, whether they're related to us or close to us, that gambles more than they can afford, that sits at a VLT, that, you know, uses money they don't have, uses someone else's money. How many times have we seen in the last couple of years right here in Westmend where employees have been charged with embezzlement or misappropriation of funds from their employer because they were gambling, that they were, you know, using it for VLTs and things like that? If those employees were using it for a massive drug addiction or alcohol addiction, it would have been picked up sooner, because you can tell those signs. You can tell it's there, you're intoxicated. Gambling, not so much. And yet we somehow judge those addicts as differently. And I had this conversation the other day at lunch, and it is one of those things that's true. We always compare ourselves to others. And when we were talking about divisiveness, and I said, the only way that anyone can be divided, the only way that a community can be divided or a country or politics, doesn't matter what you're talking about. The only way that there can ever be divisiveness is when two or more people are fighting over who is superior. When one group or both groups think they're better than the other. You know, my politics is better than yours, my religion, my race, my ethnicity, my gender, my whatever. That's where divisiveness comes from. I don't see it that way. I see us all as equals. There's no one that's better than anybody else. We're just different. And that's why we created this platform. This is, you know, Real Westmend, which is now keeping it real because we have a more broader national audience. But that's why I created this platform and this forum. And that's why I do what I do with you here, having these discussions, is because the more we talk to each other and the more we listen to each other, the more we get to realize that we are equal. We just have different perspectives and we can share and learn. And yes, sometimes there's arguments and sometimes there's debates, but that's healthy as long as we could be respectful. It's only when we start thinking somehow we're superior to others that divisiveness occurs. And this happens in the addictions world. I used to do this all the time. Because remember, I said a few minutes ago that I've known I was an addict since I was a teenager. I always knew I was an addict. And the first step in a 12-step program is realizing, you know, that you are powerless over your addiction and that your life becomes unmanageable. And I spent years saying that I knew I was powerless over my drug. I knew I was powerless over my addiction, but I didn't actually... Sorry about that. I didn't actually feel like my life had become unmanageable. It just wasn't a thing. And it was just not yet. You know, eventually it had to become unmanageable. Eventually it had to take everything from me. But I used to look at these different types of addicts, and you know, I would say, well, I am okay, so I am using this drug. Let's say I'm using cocaine. I prefer to snort cocaine, because if I snorted, you know, cut up lines and snorted cocaine, I was better than the addict that was shooting it, because I'm up here, they're down there. So my life isn't unmanageable because I'm better than they are. Like, there's a hierarchy. I used the better drugs and I snorted them. And then when you get to the point where, well, at least I'm not smoking it. Well, eventually you're going to start smoking it because it, you know, I'm not going to get into that, but it's like, okay, well, I'm not snorting anymore and I'm not up here, but I'm not down there either because I'm still not shooting it. And eventually you start shooting it and you go, oh, well, at least it's just cocaine and it's not heroin. And there's this hierarchy. But the truth is, not one of us is better than any other. And if you are addicted to anything, you are no different than the person on the street shooting up. And to assign these labels and these levels of okayness to an addiction is just increasing the stigma. We all know, you know, the story about the businessmen, the four martini lunches and things like that. You know what? Alcoholism is still an addiction. And eventually, as addiction progresses, we all end up in the same place. And how fast that happens just depends on how high up we start. And when I say high up, I don't mean in society, I mean money. Addictions cost money. So the more you start with, the longer you stay off the street. And unfortunately, addiction is a disease of poverty in a lot of cases. And that's where we need to focus and work towards. So if you do have questions, if you do have comments and you see comments like that, by all means, you know, tag me, let me know. I'm not going to get into arguments and debates over it, but I'm happy to answer any questions. If I don't know the answer, I will find out for you. I just want you to be a little kinder. You know, when you do see someone that's working through an addiction, you know, let's remember that these are human beings. These are people. They are not a disease. They are not an addiction. That does not mean they get a free pass for their behavior. That does not mean they are not responsible for their behavior. But you know what? They're also not hopeless and they're not wastes. Because I know I'm not. 19 years clean, working my ass off to give back any way I can. And I like what I see when I look in the mirror today, and I didn't 20 years ago. Things change. People change, and they deserve the benefit of the doubt. And if, you know what, a little bit of compassion can go a long way. And if you don't have compassion, at least don't make things worse. You know, people who are suffering already feel like shit. They don't need you to make them feel worse. So that's my message for you today. And 5 days, my kids let me know this morning, Santa's going to be here in four sleep. So I'm not sure when you are listening or watching this, but thank you for those who have. And if it is still a holiday season, whatever holiday you are celebrating in this amazing country of ours, happy holidays. And I hope Santa is great to you, because I'm looking forward to Christmas morning. All right, Westman, we'll talk to you soon. And thanks for keeping it real.
I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader.